Hi, welcome to the Stitch TV show. I'm Lynn.
And I'm Pam. We're happy you're joining us today. The Stitch is an online quilt talk show, the perfect soundtrack for your sewing room. In addition to our talk shows, we also post tutorial videos, virtual stitch-ins, and even online quilt classes. You can learn more at thestitchtvshow.com.
Today we're going to be talking about the most versatile block sizes and some organizing tips to help you quilt faster. We're joined by Pam's version of Bonnie Hunter's
Aleatary.
I'm so glad you said that because I was like, hey, well, quilt. The Aleatary quilt. Our show today is brought to you by our friends at QT Fabrics, and you can learn more about them in the link in the show notes.
So this is the first time we have this particular fabric on the table.
We're both drooling.
And I just assumed like, oh, it's a stack of fabrics. And then I realized, no, this is the Mingle fabric line where a yard of fabric is printed as 4 fat quarters.
I love it.
Which they can do because of digital printing.
Right.
So we're actually going to have, sometime soon, a little interview with Ken, the president of QT, about digital printing and all the different things that you can do with that, different from traditional screen printing. But, yeah, I pulled out the kit, and then I was like, Lynn started flipping through it. I'm like, oh, it's that fabric where you print the 4 fat quarters on it.
Yeah, and then I started going, because the only other, well, there's, I'm sure, other fabrics that are printed similar to this, but Jen Kingwell did, you know, blocks of stuff in some of her lines. Mm-hmm. But they were very, they weren't big, as big a chunks as this is.
Yeah.
So I think this is really kind of cool. And for 1 yard of fabric, you get,
I mean, 4 fat quarters. Because that's how math works out.
But if you think about it, though, really this is a better value because if you buy fat quarters by themselves, they add up, 4 of them add up more to than a yard of fabric does. So
yeah.
This is kind of, you know, you get 4 different looks.
Same color, too. So we just decided that, like, maybe this green, because we don't see a lot of good primary green.
I love that green.
But to get 4 of that same kind of green can be very helpful in 1 yard.
Oh, I think so, too. And just, they're nice, pretty brights. They're going to go with a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Really well, like so them. The intention is that they're going to go into this quilt.
Yes.
Because QT sent us this kit for the table. And then I thought, well, I actually want to make this quilt.
Right.
And there may be a tutorial video or something in it, too.
That sounds good. Yeah.
So we'll
it's
see.
Super
but
cute.
It's. This is a kit that they sell to quilt shops. You'll have to ask your local quilt shop if
and you carry honestly, it. Just looking at it, what if you are just starting quilting, and I know we have some beginner quilts, what a great kit.
Yeah.
Perfect. One, it's, I mean, I don't know what their price point is, but I'm sure it's not a huge investment for this many different fabrics, looks, even though it's only.
Yeah, it's 9 different fabrics.
Yeah, but you get 4 in each one. Mm-hmm. So. And that's essentially a version of rail fence.
Yeah, very just
so great beginner quilt. And wow, it's just got a neat impact too. I like the way it looks.
So in an ideal world, I will get it finished and it will hang behind us in a show or two from now.
Knowing Pam, she will, because she has process tips on how to quilt faster.
That's the second half of the show. She has to stay tuned for those.
All right.
All righty. So best quilt block sizes.
Okay.
What does best mean?
Well,
best for what? Best to fit my cat's butt when they sit
right,
on it?
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
What does that mean?
Well, I was thinking, you know, there are certain go-to quilt block sizes that can be mingled into other quilts. Because, I don't know. About
because you. Math.
Because math. And because you always have leftover blocks sometimes. You make too many. Do you make too many?
No.
That's not true. She does.
No,
she's
typically
made too many.
When
I have a queen size quilt. I thought I'd have a lap.
No, typically what happens, like when I'm following a pattern that like someone else has written, they're like, oh, we cut this and this, and you're going to have like this many left over because you need like a weird amount.
Right.
And then I have like 3 flying geese left. And I'm like,
those can't be there. That bugs you.
Yeah.
It now, totally bugs you.
A person that loved to piece labels into the back of their quilt would like just put the flying geese next to the label, but I tend to just kind of piece my backs and then attach a label like on top of it after it's quilted.
I do too, yeah.
Anyway, so But it's rare that I have orphan blocks. Usually it's from stuff that we're doing, like color lectures and all that. So I don't have a lot of leftover blocks.
I have tons of orphan blocks.
I put them into quilts and use them.
Yeah,
I built two whole quilts around four leftover blocks. I showed them at Guild. You missed it because you weren't there.
I know.
But I've put them on my personal Instagram.
So, but what my point is, if you're following somebody else's pattern, they're going to tell you what size blocks you're making.
Right.
So you're kind of stuck there. But if you're designing for yourself or you want to make a quilt for someone and you're doing it the whole design from scratch, there are some go-to block sizes that work well with other block sizes.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And we kind of talked about this a little bit last episode when we were talking about unit sizes of the blocks. So, like, I think one of my major go-to block sizes is a 9-inch and a 12-inch block because these break down into 3-inch units.
Or 4-inch, depending on the style of 12-inch block.
Right, or 4-inch units out. Yeah, so this is 4-inch units, or really
two. This
is
still 3-inch units. If it were a friendship star, it would be 4-inch units. Because you got 4 units times 3 equals 12. But if you had this block,
oh, that's
but
nine.
In 12-inch.
Yeah, she's right. This way. Yes.
Math.
I'm tired this morning.
We're both tired. A little bit of chaos. It snowed yesterday in Georgia.
It was crazy.
A little bit of drama.
It was a weird day yesterday. It was totally a weird day yesterday.
Weird.
So, but these break down into
3-inch units.
3-inch units. So what I think is nice about this is say, okay, I have 8 of these blocks. I need to make a quilt. But I need more blocks that go with this. I think it's really easy to do 4-patch
mm-hmm.
or a 9-patch in 3 inches because you can do an inch, which I think are cute. I like little piecing. And you know this. It drives you a little crazy. She likes big pieces. But if I did a 9-patch unit, 9-patch unit, 9-patch unit,
and you just have like a connector Irish chain block to
right,
set those off.
Right, in between and set those off. So 9-inch blocks are really easy to use with other blocks that are divisible by 3.
Yes.
So I go for 9, 12. Those are probably in 6.
She slipped in a couple 6s here lately because you've been doing a lot of like table runners or smaller wall mm-hmm. hangings.
Yeah.
Now, to make like a queen size quilt out of 6-inch.
Oh, that's a lot of work.
That's a lot of work. It's a lot of seams, and that's what makes big quilts heavy. When you have all small pieces on big quilts, mean heavier.
Right. It is true. That is true.
Lots of seam allowance.
But if you've got a 12-inch.
Yeah.
Now, this is finished, 12-inch finished. It's unfinished 12.5. But if you've got a 12-inch finish block, shrinking this down to half is easy to do.
Mm-hmm.
Math-wise, if you're wanting to do, like, you could do 12 around it, 6-inch blocks, and then it gets bigger, and it's cute. The bigger your block size, the less blocks you need to make a quilt.
True. That's why 12-inch blocks scale well for larger quilts.
They do.
But then as you start looking at like lap and baby, like a 9-inch size works well.
Right.
And then on down to a wall hanging or table runner, like a 6-inch works well.
Now, I'm going to throw a block size in there. I've been using it a lot lately. And I think I like it because of how I can get different things to work. But a 10-inch block I like because I like dealing with smaller pieces. And it has, you can divide those by 2 or 5. And I like it because it gives you a center, like you could do a center point here. And I really enjoy blocks that connect to other blocks. And that works well with something in the middle.
And by connect, you mean kind of like extend that pattern when they're
right.
butted up next to each
right.
other.
Like this pattern is extended from another block that comes in. It's got 2 half-square triangles on another block that would make that point.
Mm-hmm.
So I like 10-inch blocks because you can do that also with them. But I, when I'm designing, I'm always looking at what they're butting up against and can I do smaller sizes easy? Because there are certain things you do not want to figure out how to cut.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it's hard.
Yeah, unless you have like a specialty template or...
Right.
I think a lot of Deb Tucker's rulers work well in that case because she's got multiple sizes for the same unit built in there. Marty Michelle has a
Marty
new
Michelle,
thing coming
which,
out.
Yeah,
the nine-patch parade.
We're going to be a part of.
Yep.
And she really makes nine patches easier for...
Like you could make... So she's got this new template ruler set. Template set, I think, is what you would call it. And so you don't have to do the math to figure out, like, well, I need a 5-inch finish 9-patch.
Right. And that's not easy math.
That's like some crazy math with, like, a repeating 3.
Something with 7/8. I don't know.
But she's got a template set coming out for that intentionally. So.
It may already be out with this
episode. Good point. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. At least available for pre-order somewhere.
Yeah. We'll link it.
Because we saw it at Market last fall. So shops know about it and hopefully are getting it in stock.
Right. So, but what, are there any sizes that you're just like, no?
I tend to gravitate towards the 9 and the 12.
Yeah.
And lots of what I do, honestly, because I'm working with.
You do pre-cuts, the Bonnie Hunter.
No, that's not where I was going with it. Oh,
okay.
I was thinking through how I cut my scraps. Because I cut my scraps down into like consistent sizes. So I have a whole bunch of 5-inch squares in my stash and I have a whole bunch of 3.5-inch and 2-inch. And we talked about this like way back in season one, like years ago, I think. In one of our more popular episodes about like best like scrap cutting
sizes,
or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you can make a 4-patch out of the 2-inch squares and you get a 3.5-inch square. Cool.
So 3.5 works into 9 and 12
right.
size blocks, that unit.
What I tend to do is, like, there's a fabric in my stash that's just, like, sticking out to me of, like, oh, this fabric, like, wants to be made into something. Like, that one time I had that ugly fabric. It was, like, that weird mountain that was green and there was purple sky. It was real bizarre. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to cut this up. And so now I know I need to find scraps to work with it that are, like, this lavender, this purple, this, you know, whatever. And then, you know, a light and a dark value to kind of set everything off. And so I went through my scraps and I know, like, if I'm targeting a 9-inch block, I can do a 4-patch made out of 5-inch squares, or I could do a 9-patch made out of 3-inch squares. And they both come out to like 9-inch finished.
Yeah.
And so I tend to just like go through my scraps and pull out all the squares in the colors that I'm looking for. And then I just start laying them out of like, oh, this would make a good 9-patch with these 9 things and start laying them out that way.
So you tend to do 9-inch squares.
In that way. But I'm not necessarily making like star blocks and all that out of it. It's a lot of real basic, just kind of like setting units. And so, then occasionally there's a star block that's left over or something that I'll throw
right,
in there for some.
Right.
Or if I've got a print that I want to use, I will cut like a 9.5-inch square out of this print. And then that kind of is just a big, nice block of fabric so you can show off what the print is without it being too cut up.
Okay. I do have another example that was a specific block to a specific, and it was for a layered cake to do this block. Mm-hmm. The math was stupid when I had to figure it out. Because you were cutting 1 7/8 and, you know, just not 1.5 or 1 1/4 or whatever. And it ends up being a 7-inch finished block. Now, I liked the quilt when it was done, and this is a leftover block from it because it didn't use all the layer cake that I was doing for it. But it's 7 inches. It doesn't even finish exactly 7 inches. It's like 6 3/4 inches. So.
We can do that.
Yeah. So this one, that's why I'm saying, is there a go-to size? And 7 is not it. 7-inch blocks, I think, are tough, or weird 7-inch blocks.
What you could do.
Okay.
Get a piece of fabric that works with that. Cut it in the same size. Draw a diagonal line. Stitch 1/4 inch on either side. Then you got like 2 half-square triangles.
Oh, that's kind of
cute. That will probably
cute.
Finish at 6, I think.
Oh, I'd like that.
Close to 6 inch finished if you cut this and turn it into
And I have a few of these.
Well, there you go.
So this may turn up in something.
You're welcome.
Because I've been going through. Now, part of my kind of.
Or alternately, just like, boop, just trim off and use these corners.
Yeah, those corners are cute, aren't they? Yeah. It is a cute block.
It's cute.
It's cute. I think I like it because it's got that big center, and most of the times you see them more even. Yeah. And I liked it because it wasn't even. So that's what I like.
But that's
about
the trade-off.
It is the trade-off. Then you have weird sizes. And I think this is a weird size, too. I think I measured it, and it wasn't 10, and it wasn't. And it was just a specific. But
it's
let
also
me
from
just,
your first quilt.
It also is from my first quilt.
Ever.
And
look
ever.
At that seam allowance.
Look at the seam allowance.
Amazing.
Baby.
It is half an inch, 3/4 of an inch.
Oh,
who knows?
I told you what happened.
Oh, yeah, you did. You sewed it on different machines.
I sewed it on different machines, and I was just going by whatever line was on that machine because I thought that's what you followed. And
nope.
And the answer is no. So, yeah, check out that scene. So this was probably supposed to be 12 or something or 10, but it didn't. This was...
it had aspirations.
What's her name?
Eleanor Burns.
Eleanor Burns. She always threw it over her shoulder. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Not everybody would. Go look up Eleanor Burns and she'll be demonstrating something. She'll go, just get rid of this. And she'll throw it over her shoulder.
Which is great until the cat's walking by and then it's like, what?
And then it's like, game on.
It's raining fabric.
Oh, so last night, because of the snow, Josie was very, my dog, Josie was very like, I've been inside all day. So she had more energy than normal. Drove me a little crazy. She did the chase tail thing. Then she barked at us like we were doing something wrong. We were watching TV.
Yes.
Anyway.
Our dog was similar. So, but he's much more like cool with just, you know, Netflix and chilling all day. Just like,
oh, they normally are too.
Like,
but they get some outside time and like she apparently, well, they don't like snow. True. My dogs do not like snow. Like, it's not a cool thing.
Fred is not a fan. He wouldn't go out, like, through the main doors. We'd, like, take him out through the basement so he could go under the porch where there was no snow to do his business.
Yeah.
And then my husband took him out in the evening because we usually go out for, like, a big walk at a nearby park in the evening. And, like, it's cold and dark and muddy. My husband took him. Didn't last long.
Yeah. It was quick.
They were back very quick.
It was colder. It's not as cold as other parts of the world. We totally understand
that.
For
us.
But for us, it was cold.
And we moved down south to not have to deal with this.
Yes, we did. The best part about Georgia snow is 3 o'clock, it's melted. You get it in the morning. You go, oh my gosh, look how pretty this is. 3 o'clock, you're like, hey, let's go grab. We need to go to Sam's. That's what we did yesterday. We had to go to Sam's. So, all right. So that was just some ideas or I thought just which one, when you're designing for yourself, think about what it's going to go with and how easy you can break down those units mathematically.
So now we're going to take a closer look at the Aleatary quilt and we'll be right back.
All right. Well, now we're going to talk about organizing for process. And I have to admit, this is a topic that Pam wrote, put in our spreadsheet. And I went, didn't we already talk about this? But then I thought, no, we didn't. And I'm glad you put this on here because I want you to give us all your wisdom on it.
So this came about because... when I'm stuck in my car on my commute for my day job, things in my brain start to collide together. And so my day job's in cybersecurity. And we talk about data security in a certain way. Because, like, when there's a data breach, sometimes it's, oh, someone hacked a database and stole the thing. Or it's like, oh, someone intercepted when the data was flowing from one place to another. So we talk about protecting data at rest and data in motion.
Right.
And I started to think about fabric in the same way, and that Fabric at Rest is like your classic, like how to organize your stash, how to, you know, have pretty mason jars full of fabric scraps. And a lot of those tips, which are great and beautiful, but not necessarily functional. And how do we get better at organizing ourselves for when the fabric is in motion, for when we're
in
the middle of making a thing, whether we're cutting or sewing or all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it comes down to workspace orientation. And there's a lot of principles from architecture that play in here. So in kitchen design, there's this idea of the golden triangle. And so it's the how the three big appliances in the kitchen are located between stove, sink, and refrigerator. And, you know, you throw in like a food processor and all that. But like those big three ones.
Yeah.
But those big three are like.
Yeah. Those are the places you store prep food.
Yes. And you have to like commit to like plumbing and electrical decisions when you're building a house for those. So you like have to get those right. And you don't want them so close together that you're on top of each other and someone can't be like at the sink while someone else is at the stove. So you need enough space, but not too much space that now you're always, like traversing.
You can't reach really quickly
right.
and get stuff. Yes. I mean, and when you think about cooking in your kitchen, that perfectly makes sense because I remember living in an apartment and having a galley kitchen, and that was so frustrating because
you're either turning around or like reaching way far away.
Oh, it just wasn't as easy. My kitchen now has a great triangle and it works well. What I think helps with me, though, my stovetop and my ovens are separate. So mm-hmm. I think that helps.
Yes, it does.
In the process. But I like what you're talking about because you do have big appliances in the sewing world.
Sewing machine,
cutting table, ironing board.
Yep, that's the three pieces of the golden triangle here. Now, so because we're not necessarily like building our house around our sewing room.
We can move them easily.
Well, in general, yes. Or extension cords and all that lets you do that. But, you know, sometimes you're limited to like a very small space. You're
right.
Like, well,
it's a bedroom usually. I mean, I think most people.
Like a closet or like I have to put stuff out on the dining table. So there's different ways to like kind of get things set up, even if it's in a temporary location too. Of like, oh, well, we had to eat, so I had to put everything away.
Yeah.
So we could eat at the dining table.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people do that,
and
we've all started there. My first sewing room was in a closet. You open the doors to the closet, the sewing table was there with the sewing machine, and you close the door to the closet. So I had to put the ironing and cutting board up and down every time I wanted to. So, yeah, I mean, I totally get it. Now I have a much more usable space now, but
yeah, mine was on a dining table, and like my sewing machine lived in the bottom of my closet, and I would like pull it out, and you know,
yeah. So we've all been there.
Honestly, it was actually on my dorm desk at first because I was given a sewing machine when I graduated high school, and I took that with me to college, and it was real weird. I was like the only one with a sewing machine in the dorm.
My first sewing machine was my great grandmother's, which sounds super old, but she had an electric sewing machine. And it was in a cabinet. My father gave it to me. And the cabinet's about this big. And the table goes up. Mm-hmm. And then you pull the sewing machine out and it sits there. So you had this. Well, the table went this way. So you had this space. So that was my first sewing machine. And I know more today than I did then. But I hated that machine because I could never get the tension right.
Mm.
And I didn't know enough on how to mess with that. Like, I think now I still have it. I don't use it, but I could go and use that and it'd be fine.
Okay. So, organizing for process.
Right.
So,
we
get sidetracked. So, the first thing in the process is typically like, oh, I have to pull fabric. And there's tons of tips out there about how to organize fabric. So
oh, right.
We
yeah.
have to touch on that. But
yeah.
from there, you like kind of move into, depending on how you've stored your fabric, you may need to press it before you cut it.
Yeah.
Or if you're like me, you're just like, eh, it'll be fine. You just kind of smooth it out with your hands.
Can't say that I don't do that. Depends on what I'm cutting for. If I'm cutting for precision, I'll iron it.
Yeah.
But if I'm just, I need a scrap of this, no, I'm not ironing
it. Like
that.
If I'm just powering
I may use these scissors to get the chunk. That's all. Because I do applique and stuff like that, so I don't necessarily need to precision cut.
So then it's about, is the stuff at your cutting table accessible and organized in a way that you can reach it easily?
Good point.
So you should have like one spot nearby where you've got your rotary cutter, you've got your rulers there nearby. Occasionally I need like a pin, like a flat head pin.
Right. No, I agree. I'm with you.
Anything else that you have nearby when you're cutting?
Pencil or a marker that disappears. I do. Like if I'm cutting, that's the same space that I'm going to mark a line to sew half square triangles. Or I'm just trying to think. I have my rulers, my scissors, big scissors, not little snips. Little snips
like
close to my sewing
shears
machine.
For me. Yeah.
Right. And rotary cutters. And those are, like, I have a basket of rotary cutters, a basket of scissors, and then my rulers are stacked up against the wall on the top of my cutting table. And you're right. Like a pen, a little straight pen, or a pencil or some kind of marker that if I needed to mark any kind of line.
I find a dry erase marker to be handy to have there, too, because occasionally if I'm screwing up blocks and I know I need to center it on a certain thing, I will put a dot of dry erase marker on my ruler.
Yeah.
So I know, like, line this up with center points or whatever.
Or the edge, the corners that I'm trimming.
Right.
I know.
So I don't have to go back and think about it. I'm like, oh, the red line on this ruler.
Yeah, exactly. Dry erase. That's a good tip. Yep. Right. And this is the only thing I wrote down in this is everything has its place.
Yes.
Put it back. Because if you don't put it back, and this is do as I say, not as I do tip. Because there are times where I'm working on stuff. I'm like, where are those scissors? I just had them. You know, if you just try to always put the scissors or always put the rotary cutter back. Then they don't get lost on your cutting table.
Yeah. I will say my space is better laid out for a right-handed person than a left-handed person.
You should change that, left-handed person.
But I can't, and here's why.
Oh, okay.
So I had the luxury of space, and so we bought like two kitchen cabinets from the local big box home improvement store. And so I have like this nice large 4-foot by 8-foot space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's nice.
So when I stand at the cutting table on this side, I have a big pressing surface that's like right next to my sewing table where my machine and stuff is. And then I have the big giant mat and then like up there where I can't reach because like I don't have a 4-foot reach. I just don't. So it's like project boxes of like stuff that I'm working on or, you know, whatever. But because I sometimes have to, like, extend my fabric over into the cutting table, you know, if I'm, like, cutting a long board or something, I can't have, like, my basket of rotary cutters and all that here. So they're down at this end. So I do have to occasionally, like, reach over and grab stuff.
Right.
But I also, like, went and found plastic cup holders, and we just, like, drilled out big circles, and I have inset cup holders.
Oh, that's
so they won't
nice.
Tip over, which is nice.
That is nice, yeah. Mine are up against...
Yeah.
Like the wall, so they don't tip because of that. I do think that for me, and I want to ask you about your ironing station too, but for me, because I have a table that extends in the room, so I can walk around three sides of it to change where I'm cutting. And that's helpful when you have big...
Yeah.
Like if you're trimming up a quilt or whatever. So I can cut from any three sides because my cutting mat covers the entire table.
I cut from one side.
And that's very helpful. That helps in the process of... And so that's nice. Now, here's my ironing question. So you're sewing and your ironing board's right here. Do you have to stand up to iron?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
I do. Now, I do have... Like the thing that you and I will take to class, that it's like an ironing board extension that clamps on my sewing table. I will occasionally set that up if I'm doing paper piecing or something where it's a lot of back and forth.
Yeah.
But it's rare that I do that just because I don't want to get where I'm just sitting down all the time. It's better for your body if you like stand up and you're.
I'm so glad you said that because that's what I was going to say. I'm like, you do not want your ironing station. Because if it's right here and you're doing this repetitively, I'm telling you, you're going to get back sore. You will.
Even in a swivel chair.
Yeah.
Like you're going to forget to fully swivel your legs under where the ironing station is.
Yep. Because we've taken those clamp things and gone to a retreat. And so for 3 days, I'm ironing in this and ironing in this. And I even bring a swivel chair with me. And my back was sore. So sore. And it was just because of that repetitive motion. even in my own sewing room, now it's 2 steps away from where I sew, where my sewing machine is, but I do stand up and walk over to the iron.
Well, in part because, you know, my sewing table is at this height. Because my cutting and pressing table is at counter height, it's taller. And so I would be doing this, which is not good either.
Mine is too. So I do think it's good for you to stand up, walk over there, iron.
Now, that assumes you don't have mobility issues.
Yeah, very good. Yeah. So do what's best for you. But I, you know, for me, it's better if I, plus my watch likes it. It goes, hey, yay, you stood up.
So let's, thinking of fabric in motion, in the transport from cutting, like, so you've cut your pieces.
Right.
And now you need to get them to your sewing machine in an order that is not a crazy pile of stuff. Like,
I know what your tip is and I love it.
Like, what? But, like, what do you do to get? So you've cut, like, oh, I know I need to match, like, these parts of the flying geese. Like, are you just, like, grabbing them and, like...
No, I don't. So I have one of those portable swivel
cutting mats.
Mm-hmm. And so I stack them on that. And it's small enough that it sits on the table next to my sewing machine. So it allows me to keep things in order and to move it where it won't, you know, fly off or whatever. Because those cutting mats kind of hold the fabric a little bit because of how they are. And I don't have... I don't have cats that come through and go, you know, so we're good there, but that's how I move them. But I do like your tip because I think I know.
No, that's exactly what I do. What are you thinking of?
You were talking about, and maybe you forgot you told this, you were talking about how you were moving units with paper plates.
Oh, yeah. I've done that mostly at retreats, not necessarily in my own sewing room.
But I think that's a great idea because if you want to keep like... Very important if you are doing a intricate laid out quilt where like it's a rainbow or ombre effect and you can't mix up the units into a different block and you want to keep all that block units together. I think that's a perfect tip of the just get a stack of paper plates and put each block on a paper and then those lift up easily together.
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't done a ton of quilts like that. Mm-hmm. Usually when I'm doing that, it's like, oh, I want to work on a single project and it's going to take a ton of time. So that's what I take to a retreat. Right. At home, I just use like usually a 12-inch cutting mat.
Right. But I like that little portable. And you can get those at any
kind of big store.
Yeah, or big box store.
The plates I was thinking of, not the cutting mat.
Well, the cutting mat you can get at those big box stores too.
Yeah.
So, and have coupons for those because they always put that stuff on sale. Here's my other tip. Okay, so we're talking about cutting to sewing.
So now we've gotten it to the sewing, and now we have to get from sewing probably to pressing.
Like, right.
You know, you're probably going to want to press it.
You're going to stand up and walk if you can.
Yeah. How are you getting it from sewing to pressing?
I chain piece a ton, so it's already kind of in a little chain. But I cut it. I know you don't do this. I cut the threads at the sewing machine.
It depends on what I'm doing. It depends on the way that I have to press.
I have a stand that's got a blade.
I have that too.
I love those things.
So if I'm doing 4 patches where I'm spinning the seam, I just go ahead and snip all those apart using the thread cutter and then just, you know, have a stack and take it over to the pressing table.
Right.
If I'm doing like flying geese where I've got, you know, they're all connected and they all need to be pressed the same way, like I'm just flipping the wing open and pressing that, those I'll take like as one chain over there.
Right.
And then I still keep things like after I press, because I don't want to have to go back and recount like 200 things every time. I keep them in like a stack of 10 or a stack of 20.
Right. Yeah.
And that way I know like, oh, there's, you know, 3 stacks of 10. I've got 30. I've got 90 more to go.
That's interesting. I don't stack but you do a lot of repetitive blocks that you keep track of that stuff. I count when I'm cutting and I put them in stacks of 10. And then so I'll organize it like this is 10. And then this stack's 20.
I do that as well.
That's what I do when I'm cutting to know. Because I try to cut everything I need to cut first, which is good because if I ran out of fabric, that's the time where I have to, you know.
Phone a friend.
Or look at my stash and, you know, solve the problem. Say, this is the design element now.
I do that too, but I have found that, like, at least once in every quilt where I've done that, the math has gone funny, a cat's run by, and, like,
All right.
A piece is, like, flipped from wind from one stack to another. So I continually count.
But I do when I'm organizing,
yeah.
Like, this is 10, then turn right. This 10. Yeah, so yeah. That's what I do with that. So, all right, so you've pressed them.
Okay. You got some units. Now you're making some blocks.
So you're going back to sewing. And so you're just repeating that process?
Yeah, basically.
Yeah. Here's my only tip on that is once you get something organized, do your best to keep it.
Yeah. To the point that, like, for a scrap quilt like Bonnie Hunter's, when I get, like, here's my stack of, you know, 20 flying geese that are good to go, I don't just set it on my cutting table because I know I might have to move that to get to use the cutting table later on. So I have, like, kind of a big shallow bin. And then I put the stacks of the units in there. So then I can move the bin easily. I don't have okay. to, like, move 13 piles of 4 patches later on.
I tend to keep any project that I'm working on in those 12 by 12 scrapbook boxes.
Yeah,
and
like
I like the clear ones.
They're, like, 4 inches deep, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the clear ones because I can see, I can look in it and go, oh, yeah, that's this project. Because, unfortunately, my brain doesn't work like Pam's does, and I don't just do one project end to end. I will do multiple projects with multiple starts and stops, which can be frustrating if you don't kind of have that a little bit of organization. I think as a creative brain, if you don't have a little bit of organization, you can repeat a lot of steps that are unnecessary. And I think just gleaning some tips on how our brain works or my brain works, the biggest tip is once somebody has helped you or once you've got something organized, keep it. I do clean off my cutting table on a regular basis. Yeah. Like when I'm done with a project or I'm done with working on whatever step I'm working on of that project, I want that clean so that I can start off before I get. I try not to pull out multiple projects at the same time.
Yeah.
Not to say I don't, but.
Well, because especially if you like to work in a particular color and all your projects are like in that same color,
yeah.
Right? Then your stuff starts to intermingle project to project and you're like, why do I have 4 patches
yeah.
here? This quilt doesn't need. And then you just, yeah. I don't. And you throw them.
And you're like, what's that for?
That's no bueno.
Yeah, no. No bueno. So I find that if I like try to keep my cutting table clean, then it's easier for me to not backtrack and have to redo steps for create. And I know this is the hard part to be creative. It is like I don't accept process as well as she does. I appreciate it, but and I think one of the big lies that creatives try to tell themselves is that process stifles my creativity. And that's not true. It's really not. You can be creative and have a clean work environment. You know what I mean? You don't have to be. And I think that's something I had to get over. Like, but I like my mess. I do like my mess, but I have found that I'm more productive if I have, once I get something organized and I keep it organized, it's so helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Just, yeah. Like once I got my stash organized, oh my gosh, I use my stash all the time. And what I found is I used to just stuff scraps into one bin.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I just redid my sewing room and I bought all these different bins. And it took up a huge amount of space on my new shelves. And I was like, I don't know if I'm going to keep this. But I sorted all my scraps into different colors. You would not believe how much I use my scraps now. And I'm not even pulling from my stash as I'm using these scraps.
Yeah.
And feeling so much more
Like, oh, I need yellow? Cool. I don't have to dig through a giant barrel to
right,
find yellow.
Right, it's this one bin, and I pull it out, and there's this yellow, and I dig through that and find which one I'm looking for, and it's great.
Yeah.
So,
and it doesn't have to, I think you've got, like, 9-inch bins?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, like, 9-inch cube, but you can make, like, 6-inch ones.
Right.
Or, you know, it just depends on...
I had too much for 6-inch.
I know. Well, it depends on how much you have, but there's, I'm having a brain fart on what the name is. But there's a lot of modern quilt books that talk about scrap organization, because what I find really appealing about modern quilts is that they're using scraps in different ways, and that because they're doing improv piecing, that they don't need like a 3.5-inch square. They just need like a piece.
Right.
And so there's lots of cute patterns out there for like make color-coded bins. And I did this for my fat quarters where I made a fabric bin out of purple fabric, and my purple and my pink fat quarters are in that bin.
Well, what I think I'm going to do, because the 9-inch bins are really kind of big for what I want, but what I think I'm going to do is make some that are a little deeper and not as wide.
Yeah.
You know, maybe make them 6 inches, but 9 inches deep, and then 9 inches tall, and then that'll cut down on the space I'm using.
Yeah, and then you can break it down a little bit more if you need to, or just take up less room.
I'd like to take up less room, actually, because I want more fabric, but I have found that just getting that organized allowed me to use it more efficiently and go back and not discard that fabric and never look at it again.
Yeah, so. And that's definitely like a fabric at rest organizing thing.
Right,
but it helps you then when you're in the middle of, oh, I want to make a scrappy quilt and I need, you know.
Well, I've been doing all these mosaics lately. And so I was just like, I just need a little yellow here, or I just need a little red here. And I don't want to go cut off a fat quarter that I want to use maybe later in a quilt that I would need a fat quarter of. And if I cut off a little chunk, so... I have found that I'm using that a lot. I've been using my scraps this past month a ton. I'm very proud of myself for using scraps. So everything has, these are my two tips. Everything has its place, and once you get organized, keep it.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, and don't, when you're looking to organize your sewing room, don't just think about how great it looks on a shelf.
Because
it's got to be usable and accessible.
You know, the other thing is you may need duplicate items depending upon your process.
What do you have duplicates of that you find most helpful?
Scissors.
Yeah.
Scissors. Because, and I have 2 sewing machines. I have a long arm. I have more than 2, but I have a long arm and my regular sewing machine. And I need scissors at my long arm that's not close to my regular one.
Right.
So scissors, I think, are one of the main things that I duplicate.
Pin cushions.
Like, sometimes you need a pin cushion at your cutting table and a pin cushion at your sewing machine.
Yeah.
And a pin cushion at your ironing
board. I feel
board.
Like one day when I'm a fancy lady, I'm going to get rid of, like, all my existing pins and buy all new pins. Because I have, like, this mishmash. And I have, like, some ball head pins. And I'm like, I don't need those. I need flathead. My flathead ones are bent. And One day when I'm a fancy lady.
You pull out a flathead pin and it's like,
yes, most of mine are like that.
I still use them. You just kind of figure out how to work.
Oh, I didn't say I sewed them away. Yeah. I still use them bent.
I still use them.
I mean, unless they're, like, significantly bent, like I accidentally sewed it.
and it goes.
It's got a 90-degree corner. Yeah. Those go away.
I'm not saying I've done that, but, yeah.
Good times.
All
right. So, have you sized the day?
Oh, God.
With our quilt blocks? You can leave a comment on the blog or the YouTube episode or in our Facebook group, What's Up Stitches, and let us know. And that's all we have for this episode. Today's show is made possible by QT Fabrics.
I honestly thought you misspelled that. We'd like to thank Big Pink Productions for helping produce The Stitch. If you've enjoyed the show, please like, share, and subscribe. And don't forget to turn on notifications on YouTube.
More info about our show, as well as links to purchase fan gear, online classes, and quilt patterns, can be found on our website, thestitchtvshow.com.
Be sure to tune in next time for more quilting chat with friends.